This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We taped Discover Lafayette at Raider's headquarters in the Oil Center of Lafayette. Raider is a managed IT service provider that offers world-class service, including cybersecurity, communications, and technology support. With Raider, you have just one vendor and one number to call, allowing you to concentrate on what is most important, your business. For more information, visit RaiderSolutions.com. And while we're talking about Raider, many thanks to Jason Sikora of Raider, who records and mixes our sound, ensuring a professional podcast production. The generosity of Ochsner Lafayette General makes this podcast possible. Ochsner Lafayette General understands that each patient is unique, and so is your path to good health, from the miracle of childbirth to the mending of broken bones or the journey through cancer. Ochsner's physician and care teams provide access to more than 90 specialties in an ever-expanding list of convenient locations right here in Acadiana. With Ochsner Lafayette General, you're cared for through every stage of life, and healing isn't just a destination. It's a journey we walk together. For more information, visit ochsner.org/Lafayette. We're also grateful for the support of Lafayette-based ViMed, a national leader in post-acute respiratory care and sleep therapy. If you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, you may have undiagnosed sleep apnea. ViMed, right here in Acadiana, can assist with in-home sleep testing, CPAP equipment, and a personal sleep coach. For existing CPAP users, ViMed can help you maintain a restful sleep schedule through supplies and maintenance tips. Visit ViMed.com/sleep or call 866-852-8343 for more details. Our focus today is on downtown Lafayette. Joining us are Kevin Blanchard, CEO of Downtown Development Authority and Downtown Lafayette Unlimited, and Jessica Hauerbas, Executive Director of Downtown Lafayette Unlimited. The two organizations work together to preserve and enhance downtown Lafayette's place as the heart of Acadiana. Together, they provide resources for businesses, developers, and community members to keep downtown Lafayette thriving and successful. Kevin was hired to take over the helm of the two organizations this January after the departure of Anita Begno, who had served as downtown Lafayette's CEO for the past several years. As most of you know, long-time goals of downtown development have focused on the construction of residential spaces to attract permanent residents and achieve infrastructure improvements supporting the needs of a vibrant downtown. The team works to better provide support for retail activity and cultural investments to enhance quality of life and improve Lafayette's ability to recruit companies, talent, and jobs. It's all a part of making Lafayette, as well as our surrounding towns, a magnet for talent and visitors. I want to thank Kevin and Jessica for joining us. Welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. I may have said too much in the intro. I mean, do you have anything left to say?
No, I think you encapsulated that really well. I was like, that pretty much sums it up.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
So, Kevin, let's start with you.
Sure.
You've got a diverse background that actually has intersected in interesting ways. I met you back when you were a reporter with the Acadiana Advocate, and the next thing I knew, you left for law school and became editor-in-chief. I mean, talk about that, your early career.
I have been very, very lucky. I started off as a reporter. I covered politics and government in this area, got to meet a lot of people, got to kind of learn about the issues. Mm-hmm. That doesn't pay any money. So I went to law school and was able to practice law for a little bit. And that allowed me to get involved in civic things and be, you know, kind of active, and went and worked for the mayor. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's been a pretty wild adventure for me. But, you know, I feel like the downtown job is a culmination of all of that. You know, I've had the opportunity to develop real estate, and so I kind of understand what that community is looking for and how to better support that activity. And like you said, like, more residential development is the key to what we're trying to accomplish downtown. I've worked for the government. You know, we have a close relationship with LCG. We are a political subdivision, the DDA. We get a millage And so kind of what that means from the planning perspective and how we're looking at infrastructure and what sort of investments can we be making on the public side. And, you know, the rest of that I just fill in with like my normal BS and everything else.
I think it's interesting for people to know that you have worked quite a bit in the private sector. Mm-hmm. You're not just somebody that's worked on the government end.
Right. I mean,
you worked for a law firm. You were at Onabane. Mm-hmm. You work for what?
Southern Lifestyle
Development. I mean, that's such a big commitment to really building sustainable lifestyles.
Yeah.
I mean, I just love what they were doing.
Yeah. And you know, I bring a lot of my experience with Southern Lifestyles Development with me. Mm-hmm. For folks, you know, that's the company that developed River Ranch.
Yeah.
And Sugar
but so
Pond
many other and, subdivisions.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that I think translates well to this job from that is thinking about downtown like a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is a place that we want people to feel free to come and play and get entertained. It's a place where people work. It's a place where, you know, people live. We have mm-hmm. more and more residents that are moving in downtown in the last few years. We still have a long way to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, and so how do you manage that? How do you think about like, well, what am I not offering to people? Mm-hmm. What am I not offering to the market? And so that's a big part of the job.
Can you define for us, before we move on to Jessica, mm-hmm. the difference between the Downtown Development Authority and Downtown Lafayette Unlimited?
That's a very good question, and that's very helpful for context. So Lafayette is actually pretty lucky. Back in the 80s, when the oil bust had happened and everything else, that was when a lot of great things happened in Lafayette for the long term, right? That's when we started Festival. That's mm-hmm. And that is also when Downtown Lafayette Unlimited started.
Okay.
And so it was basically a task force that had been appointed by the mayor of downtown business people and property owners to be mm-hmm. like, what do we need to be doing to reinvigorate downtown? You know, it's the 80s. One of their first tasks, the Downtown Lafayette Unlimited Group, was to propose and go to the legislature and have the Downtown Development Authority created. And so the Downtown Lafayette Unlimited, the DLU, is a 501c6.
Okay.
And so it operates much like a chamber of commerce, but for downtown, mm-hmm. right? But then the DDA side of that is a political subdivision. It's funded by a millage, mm-hmm. Paid for by folks who own property downtown in our downtown taxing district. And so the beauty of kind of having those two organizations tied together and operated with the same team is that it's the full toolbox, right? The DDA can participate in a lot of the public infrastructure and mm-hmm. planning and be the coordination entity with LCG when it comes to how do we maintain downtown, who's fixing the lights and who's going to empty the trash cans mm-hmm. and that sort of thing. And the DLU, what Jessica does day in and day out, is promoting downtown from a marketing perspective, talking to business owners. You know, our members at DLU are small business owners downtown. And how are we doing the soft things, right? How are we promoting? How are we getting foot traffic here? Mm-hmm. How are we telling our story? And I think the interesting thing that we can talk about, what we're moving into, is how do we even broaden what we offer through the DLU to a larger part of our downtown community, but also the community as a whole. And
so
we actually are going to be kicking off, and maybe Jess can talk about that, kicking off a big neighbor-to-neighbor campaign, and that's going to be an example of mm-hmm. What we're trying to offer the community.
I think that's a perfect segue, Jessica. If you can talk about your role as executive director for the Downtown Lafayette Unlimited.
Yeah, of course. So the nonprofit itself is doing a lot of work day in and day out with a staff that we have, whether that's programming some of our own events or helping other businesses downtown promote theirs, also growing membership. The list kind of goes on and on. But to Kevin's point, at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is drive foot traffic to downtown so people mm-hmm. can experience it. And I think for a long time, what that looked like was, here's your crowd from 8 to 5. You're kind of like business-minded people. And then there's the nightlife. And I think over the last probably decade, maybe even a little bit more, it's become more like a neighborhood where we're having good activation 24 hours a day. Even when those late hours are people sleeping, that's good activation that we want. So when we talked about some of the direction we wanted to go in with the organization, we want to continue doing events, continuing doing things like Downtown Alive, which has been around for 40 years, but also how do we take the next step in developing resources and opportunities for the people who have their business downtown or are just stakeholders in the area as well. Mm-hmm. And so we really want people to view downtown like a neighborhood where 24/7 you are seeing people on the sidewalks and it feels comfortable, yeah. It feels right. I'm a mom of three small children. And so I'm always looking at downtown and my work through that lens. I said, what would I want my kids to see? And mm-hmm. whenever they grow up, what will downtown look like for them? And what have I seen over the last decade? And I think a lot of our programming and our efforts, we want to be family friendly because we also know that that is where people want to invest money. If they know that it's safe and they know that it's clean and they know that mm-hmm. it's vibrant, people will want to visit and people will also want to invest there.
So events besides Downtown Alive, is Bach Lunch one of your
yes.
events?
Yes.
And that's a daytime, that's like a lunch
yes.
type of event. And you'll see people of all ages
yes.
go to that.
Mm-hmm.
What other type of events have you participated in?
Well,
in your role?
I think for DLU, we really want to be the thought leader of what's happening downtown, what are best practices. And we have had a ton of interest in our Lunch and Learn series, as well as our Coffee with Community Leaders series, because they really open the door for unique conversations with things that are happening not only downtown, mm-hmm. but that affect the community as a whole. I think a big perception that we're trying to overcome is that our organization's worried about just downtown and whatever happens outside of, you know, Johnson Congress and University isn't up to us. But I think for us, we have the perception that a healthy downtown means a healthy Lafayette and a healthy Acadiana. And so we're bringing in partners and speakers like Munkus Park and our mayor president and other people mm-hmm. who want to talk about what downtown means for the district, but also what downtown means for all of Acadiana.
Right. I had read Quint, he's probably got several books, but is it Quint Studer? Mm-hmm. Is that his first name? Vibrant Communities. And, mm-hmm. you know, the core of any community is its downtown, mm-hmm. as well as having a vibrant library system and all these other mm-hmm. things that seem to be sometimes controversial, really historically and over time, they are the true core mm-hmm. of a great community.
Yeah.
And so I'm so glad that more and more people are figuring this out. And, you know, when I think about downtown, I'm going to go back to Kevin. You mentioned Jessica Johnston, University and Congress. Where is downtown? How far out does it spread from Jefferson Street and those side streets?
So, you know, that's a very involved question because I get that in a different context often. So the downtown district mm-hmm. is roughly like a block on either side of Congress and Johnson and the university,
okay.
right? So it goes about a block deep into LaPlace, about a block deep into Freetown. We have a cultural boundary that provides folks with certain kind of incentives. If you do certain kind of investments in a cultural boundary, there are some mm-hmm. positive implications for that. That's even bigger than that. That actually includes most of LaPlace, most of Freetown, a lot of Macomb-Vise, but that is not a taxing boundary. But what I try to tell people, to your point about like, you know, how we've developed over time and sort of, you know, how we associate, what is downtown, right? Before, you know, the 50s and the interstate boom and all this other stuff, downtown was just the town.
Mm-hmm.
That was just
right.
where we all shopped. Yeah. It's where we worked. It's where our offices were. And those surrounding neighborhoods where everyone lived, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've tried to start, you know, using sort of the language of downtown area when I'm talking about
okay.
some of these things, because I really think that, you know, we're talking about affordable housing as an issue, right, in this city. And it's a thing that we're dealing with in Lafayette that is kind of new for us, but that is an important, we're at a crisis point really when it comes to where are people going to find safe, affordable places to live, right? Well, the reality is like all over the neighborhoods in the surrounding downtown area, that is their problem. Like affordable housing is the problem for the downtown area. It's not just a Lafayette problem, right? The homelessness issue and like how do we deal with those folks who don't have anywhere to live and oftentimes
right.
in like really tough mental situations and everything else. Well, often that plays out in the downtown area. That's happening either on mm-hmm. Jefferson Street or it's happening in LaPlace by where the homeless shelter is, or it's happening in Freetown or whatever. So like, all we want, and that's kind of our new mindset and what we've been talking to our community partners about, we have the resources and the ability to lead those types of conversations in a way that is both smart for the community, right? But it's also smart for us, you know, a problem for Freetown is a downtown problem.
Right.
That is our doorstep. And so we're going to be doing a lot of work with the neighborhood coteries and the agencies that are kind of involved in that, some of that work, because we think that's our job too.
Adjudicated properties also.
That's another issue. Yes. Yeah. That again is like
most of them are right there.
Outside
of downtown.
We're lucky within like downtown proper, if you will, to have high enough property values that's not a problem for us. But you literally take that boundary of downtown, and our adjudicated property problem surrounds the downtown proper area, right? So yes. So as far as I'm concerned, how do we better deal with our adjudicated properties is a downtown area issue.
It's such a paradox because it's such a convenient place to live, beautiful areas, but with the number of blighted homes that are adjudicated, you know, they could be affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we have so many, and this is, you know, why we want to get into these kinds of policy discussions. So many of the barriers to infill for folks in that neighborhood are surmountable. You know,
They are surmountable.
Yeah. They are things that we can figure out locally that we can like figure out on our own. And so, so it's frustrating because we're so close, but it's also hopeful because I know that we've got the talent and the ability here to figure it out.
Right, right. Well, let's talk about some of the cool things that are going on.
Okay.
And I do want to get in about infrastructure, so don't let me forget that. But let's talk about some of the new residential developments, municipal lofts.
Okay.
Anything else you'd like to talk about that has really offered people a you know, great place to live or they can walk to work.
Absolutely. So we just finished a residential market study and did a lunch and learn a couple weeks ago to announce the results of that. And we've actually done the same study four times over the last like 15, 20 years. And so we can kind of see the trends as we've moved forward in time. And there continues to be a demand for about 1,000 new residential units of housing in the downtown area over the next 5 years.
My goodness.
And so the question is, where is it, right? Mm-hmm. Why isn't that happening? We've built, for folks that don't know, there are three relatively new residential properties downtown, the Vermilion Lofts that Stephen Ortego and his group built, the Municipal, which is the beautiful project that E.J. Crampy and his team did in the old federal building. And then the newest one is the Monroe Apartments, just outside of downtown proper taxing district, but inside the downtown cultural boundaries in LaPlace, which that is 70 units of market rate housing. And so we've gotten those initial projects started, right? So 10 years ago when we were like, we got to do more residential downtown, how is it ever going to happen? Like, it's happening, right?
But it can't just happen by itself.
It's not going to happen.
Infrastructure improvements are needed.
Like my prior job to the DDA, I was at the Public Trust, and we're the ones who built the Monroe. And I can tell you from the conversations I've had with Stephen and EJ, downtown residential projects are hard. They are hard to pull off. You don't have, you know, just the, if you just think of the typical kind of like suburban construction, you got this big open wide grass field and you just kind of build the things where you want them and put a driveway in, connect it to a road. You got a development, right? Downtown, we don't know what's underneath the ground. These streets were built in the 1800s.
Yeah, it's all old stuff.
it's little postage stamp like space that you got to put on. And so the costs for that type of development, you know, apples to apples are so much higher. The problem is from the public's perspective, that type of development is so much more beneficial to us as like a city because that little postage stamp value is just going to put in tons of tax benefits, the streets and the infrastructure, all the stuff that, you know, you would have to build new for a greenfield site. It's already there, right? And so how do we kind of turn the corner and get from the point where, you know, rather than continuing to read about the market studies to say 1,000 new units over 5 years, how are we going to build those units? So the, you know, definitely kind of the beauty of Jessica and I working together is Jessica is 24/7 on the DLU, like promotions, events, marketing. And it has allowed me to spend a lot more time, I think, than any of my predecessors on just dealing with the development community and the direct issues of like, okay, what's stopping us? And then the number one piece of feedback that I've gotten both before I took the job and after about what do we need to do downtown is like get control of the perception that our nightlife is out of control, right?
Is that one of the number one things?
That is pretty much the number one thing. You know, that market study that we did showed that there are, let's say, of the market that is they've identified that these are the folks that would move downtown. If there was a product available for them, they would live downtown, right? Well, of like, let's say that's 100 people. Of those 100 people, 70% are either married but no children or aren't married, right? Those are our younger mm-hmm. single crowd or young professionals. That is always and has been the kind of the base target audience, what we're trying to do. But if you actually look over time, since we've been doing the study, what used to only be like 10%, which is now like 25% of that 100% number, is empty nesters.
That's what I was thinking.
That is the growing segment, not just for our downtown, but for downtowns mm-hmm. across the country mm-hmm. of people. I'm going to be there pretty soon myself, where it's like my kids aren't in the house anymore.
You don't need a big house with a big yard.
I don't need this big yard. Yeah. I don't need all these bedrooms. I like the fact that I could like go out to eat, you know, in many different places, mm-hmm. maybe even work near downtown already. But that is not the early adopter audience, right? Those younger people, they are moving downtown. Like mm-hmm. that's a thing that's happening. Like if you have the income and you're younger and you want to live downtown, we have those opportunities for you now. But we still have like a post 10 p.m. relatively chaotic atmosphere downtown. You know, I don't know that a lot of people realize this, but you know, for your older Lafayette listeners, like the Strip was where you used to go hang out in college, right? Well, the Strip is no more. Mm-hmm. But the Strip—
There's no more bars that are open?
No.
Okay. You can tell how often I would go.
Because they've moved downtown.
I see. Mm-hmm.
And so we have, you know, probably a much higher percentage than what is healthy of under 21 age people coming downtown. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be drinking. That's not the drinking age, but that there's a lot of that happens. And, you know, I used to be 19. I have two 19-year-olds. I'm sympathetic to the plight and everything else. But you have to remember that we're doing this now, this postage stamp environment. We're all on top of each other. If this was a club that was maybe catering to, you know, teenage drinkers out in a field somewhere, that there is less impact on the neighbors than when you are in what is a neighborhood, right? And I'm not going to get those empty nesters to come and make an investment downtown when the perception is going to be, well, if I left my house to walk my dog at 10 o'clock at night, I'm going to run into my grandkid as she's like throwing up on the sidewalk or something, right? Like it's just there's a worlds colliding sort of problem right now that's happening downtown uh-huh. where, you know, our 8 to 5 feels very much like a functioning, cool yeah. neighborhood, mm-hmm. but you don't want drunk teenagers in your yard no matter where you live.
Right. Oh, boy, is that true. Yeah.
No matter where you live, yeah. right? And so so that's one of the things that we were going to be focused on.
Is that more police presence or is it just more monitoring of the activities?
So we are actually have started working with the city. We have told them that we are going to propose a set of ordinance amendments.
Okay. Like noise ordinances or what?
We will probably make some adjustments to the noise ordinance. That's something that's been in practice for like 15 years now. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of know what could work or better. I think the biggest will deal with underage drinking.
Okay. Which helps everybody.
It helps everybody.
Especially the kids.
Yeah. Look, it's not safe. I don't know that if you know, a lot of people know this. It's something that I have learned. There was a really tragic incident at Tigerland last year in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, Tigerland is the strip for LSU, right? That's where all the kids go. And
that young lady was
raped and murdered, and it was really terrible. And she had 19, had a blood alcohol level of like 0.3 or something. Well, the response in Baton Rouge was they went and raised their penalties for underage drinking, right? Mm-hmm. And just said, we're going to take a stand. And so what's happened is that the operators at Tigerland are starting to self-regulate more and themselves be there to be like, I'm not going to mess up and sell accidentally to a 19-year-old and then have to, you know, shut down my bar for a weekend, right? Like, that's not worth it. Like, I would just much rather not accidentally sell to an underage person. I think we've got to get there as a city, not just as a downtown. Yeah. I think we've got to get to the point where we're like, look, there's just some activity that we can't condone. It's already on the books. Mm-hmm. We're not asking for folks to like make it illegal to drink alcohol when you're 19. You're not supposed to. But I especially on the behalf of like the neighborhoods, not just downtown, but the neighborhoods surrounding downtown. Right. It's just not the type of environment that anybody would want in a mm-hmm. place where they live.
I'm glad you brought all this up because sometimes it's easier not to talk about things.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And we need to, as a community, like you're saying, it's not just quality of life, it's safety.
Yeah, safety.
And mm-hmm. respect for life. Yeah.
And so we're going to do that. And to answer your original question, I think, which was about like, how do we generate more interest in residential development? I think big picture, that's what it is. We just mm-hmm. remind everybody that this is a neighborhood and we're trying to build out a neighborhood. And we've had so many people. I have been lucky enough. I'm not coming to this job from out of town, right? I've seen downtown. I've been mm-hmm. a downtown person. I get it. I've worked there. I am so optimistic about where we are with downtown Lafayette, no doubt.
Yeah.
You know, the crazy thing is in 2016, we had like, you know, you judge a bar by its capacity, right? Like how many people can it hold? Well, in 2016, we had about 5,400 capacity, right? 5,400 people capacity. 5,400 people could go into bars in downtown Lafayette. Okay. That was how big of a bar space we had, right? That was the scene, mm-hmm. the size of it, 5,400. Today, that number is 3,000. Because in 2017, we did away with the moratorium, which was this weird sort of backwards thing where we didn't allow bars downtown, which meant that if you had happened to have a bar downtown when we put that rule in place, you could almost never go out of business, right? So the city in 2016 was like, this is not a functional system. We put a conditional use permit in place. That conditional use permit process is working.
Good.
Like the bars that are coming downtown are great operators. They've got clear rules on what they want to follow. Mm-hmm. Like that's what I want to like double down on is how do we get to these situations where we've pre-negotiated these situations the way that a neighborhood would and say, well, look, if this is a use that's going to be acceptable to us, like don't let people under 21 come in, right?
Right.
Let's keep the capacity down. Having a good, active, healthy nightlife is part of being downtown, mm-hmm. right? We just have to hit the balance point.
I'm wondering if Jessica, she's working downtown. I mean, you have a couple of small grocery deli places, right, that you can mm-hmm. walk to. I know that's, you need more than just residences. You mm-hmm. need functional, mm-hmm. you know, things. So you want to talk about that, what it's like working downtown and what you see?
Yeah. I mean, for me, since I've lived here the last 14 years, I've only had one job that was not downtown. So it's been, I've had the unique opportunity both as a student, young professional, and now a parent and a semi further along in my professional career to kind of see what the growth has been like. And also the amenities that I want to see mm-hmm. have changed. And so I think from our perspective, and we're having discussions with business owners and residents and visitors and really everyone in between about what will bring you down here. Because mm-hmm. Kevin said something brilliant the other day where downtown is the new mall. You park once and you're able to eat, you're able to shop, you're able to have unique experiences. And we're really trying to bring that. And so to your point, you know, teaching people how to do that, I think is different where people mm-hmm. I think are so used to getting in their cars, going somewhere and then loading back up and going somewhere else. But we're trying to encourage people who may have not done it in a while, not been downtown either in even months, years, what have you, just to come and experience it. Because I think once people see it and feel it and can experience it for themselves, the perceptions that we're talking about are able to fade away.
Why don't you talk about the playground a little bit, too? That's a new thing.
Yeah, I would love to. In fact, I could talk about that all day. So several years ago, probably 3 to 4 years ago, we've been talking about Parc Sans Souci, mm-hmm. and it's really a treasure in downtown and what I consider really to be the anchor. So many things happen there from festival to Downtown Alive to the Why Lafayette sign. And the more that we were thinking about how to bring families downtown and true infrastructure that says it's welcoming to families, what does that look like? And so several years, they went down the path of what does a playground in this space look like? And the playground's location is behind the small red Parc Sans Souci building. And what was there before was 6 parking spots, just 6. And so what stands there now is a 6,000 square foot, beautiful state-of-the-art playground that was funded completely by private donations. And so when you think about $1 million worth of private donations, I think it speaks for itself that philanthropists, donors, companies want to see vibrancy in the area and that they're willing to invest in it. Mm-hmm. And now that that project is complete, we're even looking at how do we continue the momentum that we have here. And we've been doing a lot of partnerships with the Children's Museum to paint a mural on the back part of their wall that faces, because it really does serve as the backdrop for the park. And really that area, not becoming the new Jefferson Street, but an extension of Jefferson Street and an area where people are walking, it's vibrant, and really the foot traffic is starting mm-hmm. to spread, which of course is the dream for us.
Right. So the city's responsible for maintaining the new playground, the expanded
yes.
playground and all that. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there was a good arrangement that the DDA and the city met to kind of make that deal mm-hmm. happen. Now, we are going to continue to privately fundraise for some of the equipment costs, because mm-hmm. if you haven't seen it yet, it really is like it's this beautiful custom-made equipment that they got from a specialist company in Germany that is like one of the world's most, I mean, yeah, the stuff is like pretty cool. And like you could park a tank on it. It's so like, you know, well built.
Indestructible.
Yeah.
Huh?
Oh, yeah.
But it's very well designed. It's just when you see mm-hmm. the kids play on it, you realize like, oh, this is like they really thought through the mm-hmm. details on how kids are going to play with this and how they're going to use it. And it's accessible. And so kids in wheelchairs, kids of all abilities are able to go and participate in a mm-hmm. way that they didn't do for us when we were younger, mm-hmm. had playgrounds. You know, the first day when we opened up the fence, took the construction fence down, and it was kind of our cold open on this playground downtown, right? And it's no secret that we have to like think about how to deal with homeless folks and like vagrancy and that sort of thing. It's one of the things you work through in a downtown area. And so, you know, I have been concerned. I was like, I just want to know, like, how is this park going to function, you know, when we finally open it up? This is why I'm optimistic about where we are downtown. For the next 48 hours, I probably put my eyes on that thing 50 times. At no point was it empty. There were always people playing on it. Mm-hmm. At lunchtime, every day, just go to lunch. If you go for lunch, just drive by downtown, Parc Sanssouci, and look. I bet you're going to see at least 10 or 15 people, mm-hmm. kids with their moms playing.
That's wonderful.
You know, people are driving in from Broussard to mm-hmm. like make a play date with their kids and their kids' mm-hmm. friends, you know, that need something to do during the day. Like, just think about that. Like, we're at a point in our life cycle as a downtown where we've gone from in the 80s, where downtown is where you went to the courthouse or you went to go clubbing. Mm-hmm. Like, now it's a place where we have play dates,
mm-hmm.
you know? And, you know, not of all ages. I'll tell you, like, you know, one of the times I went through there and there were like four ladies in their 60s, and one of them had obviously tried to climb the thing and probably shouldn't. And her friends are trying to get her down. Tons of laughter, no children involved, right?
Yeah,
they weren't there with their grandkids or anything. They were just having fun.
Jump, Jeannie.
Yes. Yes. And that's the sort of experience yeah. and sort of vignettes that
yeah,
happen
wonderful.
All the time now. You know?
Yeah.
And so it's really been, I get choked up a little bit when I think about it, because, you know, we talk a lot in theory about we've got to make a downtown that's for everybody, it needs to be accessible. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to pull off in practice, right?
Right.
And so when you finally see it, and you know, so Downtown Alive now, I've had tons of friends who have kids in that like age group where like, man, I wish I could do more stuff, but my kids are still kind of like, you know, difficult to bring around and do stuff. Mm-hmm. Tons of kids, of parents now, they're like, I finally got to go to Downtown Alive again because I could like actually stand and watch the music and have my kid play. And I didn't feel yeah. like anybody was going to like run off with them mm-hmm. or anything. It's
right.
super safe, the whole bit.
Right.
So it's kind of an opportunity to kind of rediscover downtown.
And truly during festival, and everyone was nervous, they're like, they're going to have hundreds of thousands of kids on this thing. What is that going to look like? Is it going to trash the park? I think it's one of those things where if you have something nice, people feel it. The whole playground area, I went on Sunday afternoon with my kids and kind of holding my breath, like, what am I about to walk into? The whole area was kept clean. The kids were kind. They took turns. And so my mother heart was, you know, very proud mm-hmm. because I think everyone understood that this is a nice thing that we want to maintain and everyone deserves to have an opportunity to engage with.
Right.
And then, of course, with my downtown hat, I'm relieved to know that this big investment is being well taken care of by the community. Mm-hmm. So that was
That's
a really
great.
Unique thing, too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the stores downtown, too. I miss some of the old stores that have, you know, gone away.
True.
But there's some eclectic stores. There's consignment shops and home accessories. And while I miss having those big stores, I guess with, you know, internet shopping like Amazon, you can get just about anything you need. So what we have now is like it really people can walk in and shop and find unique items.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, 100%.
I love it.
We have a why don't you talk about Colette a little bit and that store?
Yes. So Colette,
it's a good example of the sort of folks that are moving into downtown right now.
So Colette Bernard is 25-year-old artist who is from Lafayette and moved away to New York to go to school and kind of start her art career. And as a lot of people did when the shutdown happened, she said, what do I do right now? And so she, as many, you know, Gen Z are able to do, went viral with one of her artistic pieces, and it gave her the opportunity to come home and invest in the community because she could have done that from anywhere, but she chose to move back home and open a store called Cocodry that has local artist-made goods, both by her and other artists as well, and she's continued to expand, and she even opened up a second shop called Retro where different people are able to curate vintage, really unique pieces, and what she is really building is one, opportunities for artists to be downtown and to make a career of being an artist. And two, she is hiring full-time staff.
Wow.
I mean, when you think about economic development, that's, to me, that's the American dream, is going viral and being able to hire people because of it. And so it's been a really cool, unique opportunity to hear her story and hear about how, though she could be anywhere, she chose to open a brick and mortar and also operate her online business really right here in her community.
Right. All the work you do, I know you've got volunteers behind you. Do you have two separate boards?
We do.
If you want to talk about that.
We have two separate boards. The DDA board is appointed that was set up by state legislation. And so that's kind of like different people have different appointments to that board. There's seven people on that board. And we have a larger DLU board that is more of a membership-based board, typical like nonprofit board. Super engaged, involved people downtown. Like it really is like
both of them have people that have businesses downtown.
Businesses, and in fact, one of the requirements for the DDA board in the legislation is that you have some connection to downtown. Like you have to be a business or a property owner or run a business, that sort of thing.
So you had to get hired by both boards.
I did. I did.
A challenge?
It was a. You know, luckily, like I said, I'm not from out of town, and a lot of these folks are all people that are very active and engaged in the community, so I was lucky to know most of them.
Yeah.
But yeah, and look, I think that the genius of those two organizations being together takes a little bit more work, but it pays off in the end. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sitting here, you know, I'm always trying to think, how do I get, you know, someone to pay for this $12 million project, right? Well, a good way to do that is by also being able to message how important this $12 million project is and how this fits into the big picture downtown and to do programming about how it is that this type of project is going to like make a difference for our small business community, right? Like that's the key to this whole thing.
So you're looking at all the opportunities for growth. You're also doing fundraising. Mm-hmm. So, Jessica, I guess this goes more to you. If you want to talk about some of your fundraisers, I have a note here about the crawfish boil. I guess that's already happened. That was a month or so ago.
Yes.
Yeah. So talk about that. That's a rooftop crawfish boil.
Yeah. It's our signature event. People love coming to it. It was our 20th year this year.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's a super unique opportunity. It's so cool because it's probably one of the best views downtown, and you really get a literal lay of the land of what everything looks like. And it's just lighthearted and it's very fun. And it just gives us an opportunity to engage with people. It's a networking opportunity. But we, this year, are launching a new type of fundraiser as well in the fall called Farm to Tableau. And the way it came about was we, of course, love the crawfish boil and we'll continue to do it. It's a great opportunity. But we also wanted an opportunity to celebrate what people love about downtown, which is wonderful food, wonderful culture, and art. And Farm to Tableau is that unique opportunity to celebrate those things. And so in November, with Acadiana Center for the Arts and in conjunction with several people in the community who serve on all kinds of different committees whose skill sets are in food, art, beverage, event planning are all coming together from these different corners of downtown and the community as a whole to put this event together and really celebrate everything, all the work that we've been doing. And mm-hmm. I think it's serendipitous that it's held at ACA, because a lot of what DLU work has done over the past several decades is help getting ACA built and different opportunities like that. But also a way to celebrate all the milestones that we've had while also being mm-hmm. for a good cause.
Mm-hmm. So that's the Van Gogh Art
That's right.
Night.
Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. exactly.
That'll be in November.
Yeah, yeah, November 10th.
How many people can go to that event? Like, what's your hope?
About 250 is the dream. If we can sell out tickets, it'll be 250 lucky mm-hmm. people able
yeah.
to come.
Yeah, yeah. It's gonna be. And I like that Sunday night in November.
Yes.
It's
yes.
a cool
it's
time
a cool
to
weather.
Kind of dress up.
Yeah.
And yet Sunday nights are just, you know, just easier.
Yeah. And we love our restaurant partners. They mm-hmm. are obviously a huge role in this. I think one of the things people obviously love to do is dine downtown. And so a lot of the restaurant partners and the chefs are coming together to curate a special menu just for this event. And so the foodies of Lafayette will obviously love it, but it's also an opportunity, because most of them are closed Sunday night, for them to kind of come together mm-hmm. And celebrate them and thank them and just kind of have a more formal awards mm-hmm. season type of event. So we're excited about yeah. it.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people don't realize this, but I talked a little bit about how, you know, we've lost, like we've decreased bar size, right, yeah. since 2017. We have increased our restaurants. Our restaurant count just like six, 7 years ago was 19. We're at 29 today.
29 restaurants?
There are 29 mm-hmm. restaurants downtown.
Wow.
Gosh. And that's the whole gamut from, like, there's a Subway to yeah. Vestal,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
But there are so many opportunities. And except for the Subway, like, they're all, like, locally owned, mm-hmm. you know, people, blood, sweat, and tears, like, putting into that restaurant. So I'm excited. I think Farm to Tableau is going to be, like Jessica said, a really good way to showcase, like, look at all the great food yeah. we have downtown. And look yeah. at the things that we do here, you know? Mm-hmm. I am not the coolest person in the world, but hopefully it's
not
a very cool
Kevin.
Party. Yeah. I wanted to make sure they knew that when they were hiring me, yeah. that, you know, the image of, like, you know, the button down, like, hipster, like, you know, cool
that's
guy thing. That's not really me, you know?
You know, I know it was controversial, but I had always hoped that we could have our performing arts center
sure.
close, if not in downtown. It's just things were boxed in at this point.
Yeah.
With all those restaurants and walking opportunities to explore downtown, you know.
Yeah. No, it's what I'm trying to, I think, yes, it is yeah. a shame that, mm-hmm. that's not in the plans currently, but there's still a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm.
And it's not that far if it goes over.
Yeah, it's not
UL.
That far away if it goes to UL, and we'd be happy for them and would love to kind of make sure that that's a success. I think that, you know, honestly, we have the type of environment, the experience, that if we continue to do that and provide mm-hmm. that type of experience, opportunities are going to continue
yeah,
to come.
Right. What does downtown look like a couple of days after festival ended? We're here the Wednesday after Festival International. And I know, Jessica, you said the playground stayed clean, but mm-hmm. that was a lot of people out
look,
there.
Look, this is the first time
Saturday.
That I was able to go with the festival folks and mm-hmm. kind of do a tour and, like, figure out. I think we take for granted, really, what a giant operation that is. Like, we are, like, putting a Super Bowl on.
Yeah.
Like, there were 150,000 people downtown on Saturday. Like, if you think about that, that's right. like more people than an LSU game.
But it was just so casual and fun.
And it's so casual, it's so fun, and it right. seems like so, you know, well done, and it is well done. But the amount of work and effort that they put into that, the festival puts into that, is really mm-hmm. world class.
Like,
it's mainly volunteers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so we're excited about, okay, if we're thinking about how we provide all these great experiences, right? We didn't get a performing arts center. Well, what do we do to make sure that festival, for example, can do everything that it's trying to do and accomplish everything that it's mm-hmm. trying to accomplish, right? And so one of the things that we'd love to do is sit down and talk about, how do we take our festival venues today, the stages that we have today and everything? And, you know, so many of those, you know, are, like, you know, duct taped in. You yeah. know, they threw a tent onto, like, a parking lot somewhere and, like, ran some extension cords to, like, get a, you know. And when you think about it, in the 80s, 1987, when it started, people were like, you're nuts. You're doing what? Mm-hmm. And so this was a bunch of volunteers that were, like, just pulling tents together and throwing stages and trying to figure it out. And so what I would love to do is to get to a point in a community where, as a community, like, as a parish, we all go, hey, this is really good for us. Like, this is a thing that we should all be like doubling down on. This is an investment that like is paying off for our community 10 times. And make those investments downtown so that they have some permanent venue space. And so that they're able to come in and like put on a great show, get all these hundreds of thousands of visitors that we attract every year to do this. But they do so in a way where maybe they're not like, you know, duct taping themselves to death every year. Because to answer your original question, it's just now kind of getting all picked up. It does take several days.
Even dismantling the stages.
Dismantling the stages, the whole bit. It's like a, you know, I'm sure that that whole, it's kind of like CPAs in tax season, right? I'm pretty sure all the festival people by this weekend, you're not going to see them for another month.
They're going to be just
even the restaurants will, they'll close for a couple of days because like, our staff is very tired and we're going to take a break. See you at the end of the week.
But what an amazing success. I remember back in the 80s, it started with an international business exchange.
I wasn't here yet.
But Philippe Gustin and others got together. I got to sit in on some of those meetings. And the real purpose was to try to get work back into Lafayette and to get visitors here.
Yeah.
Then the festival grew out of it. And who would have ever thought it would be this big of a success?
Look, I'm always I think that Lafayette is at its best when we're like betting on ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And
always.
When we like, you know, just say, look, you know, we can do this. Let's figure it out.
Well, look. While we're winding down this, and I know, Jason, you're going to have questions too, right?
I always do.
We're here with Jason Secor. I wanted to ask about the police presence. I forgot to ask about that. So now there's a fifth precinct downtown, and I've got to think that helps with your original discussion about your long-term goals of changing perceptions of downtown.
Absolutely. Look, I am in no way responsible for making sure that there's a downtown precinct, but I will claim credit for that forever because I think that is like has been a big change that is going to pay dividends in the long run.
They're in Rosa Parks.
Yep. And it's just
by the bus station.
It's like any other type of beat, I guess. I'm not a law enforcement expert, but like just having the same group there all the time, they kind of know the issues, they get to know the problems, they kind of can be part of the solutions. And so we've actually have regular meetings with the police department and kind of that little group of folks who are focused on the nightlife all the time. So it's really like I can't tell you enough. The list of things that has happened over the last 15 years to get us to this point is remarkable, and the police precinct is one of those.
And your predecessors have worked so hard to where you are now. That took a lot of people. Investing their lives in downtown.
My predecessor, Anita Begno, is a good friend of mine, and she was in town for festival because they always come back for festival. Mm-hmm. They, you know, people will go for a job somewhere else, but they always come back for festival.
And that was a haul coming back from Virginia.
Yeah. And so we had lunch, and I told her, I was like, my joke is that my revenge for you leaving town is that I'm just going to claim credit for everything that you started, you know? But I mean it sincerely. Like, that's going to be my job for the next year or so, is like just being able to talk about all of these big developments that have been happening or that are happening. Hopefully, like, just, you know, can tell Anita when she comes back next year that, you know, I've accomplished even more while she was gone.
Yeah, I miss her.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, Jason Secor, thank you for recording us today.
Of course.
I'm finally getting the word right after years of saying taping.
Taping, recording.
Yeah, but you've been writing notes. Any questions?
I do. Well, first of all, Jessica, Kevin, thank you for coming down to the Oil Center to do a podcast.
Of course.
Which I consider the downtown area.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I like it. We've talked about development, or you guys have, development and events. Is there a place online I can go to look up this stuff? What's happening in terms of development and events? Where is that? URLs, Facebook, whatever that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So our social media is probably the best place to find all the really fun stuff. So Facebook, Instagram, and then our website, downtownlafayette.org, also has all that information available as well.
Okay, perfect. Kevin, you talked about downtown perception. I understand the perception and I've heard it, but for me personally, I don't see that as the reality. Mm-hmm. Is the reality equal to the perception, or is it kind of skewed?
Well, so let me just ask you this. Like, we can get really deep here and say, is there a difference between perception and reality?
Oh, God.
I mean, I love an existential conversation. Yeah.
Twilight Zone.
No, look, I think that's my answer, and I'll say it this way. You know, look, I'm 48 years old. I moved to Lafayette in college. So I've been here for my adult life. I have been to downtown Lafayette, right? But it's been a while since I've been to downtown Lafayette after 10 p.m. I took my kids out about a month ago, I have two 19-year-olds, twins, with who have active social lives. And I was like, look, I want you guys to take me out tonight. I want to go downtown. I want to, like, see what you guys do. We did not go into any bars, for the record. Did not go drink with my children. But I did hang out with them and, like, kind of talk and, like, you know, had my noise meter out, like, doing the whole dad thing, you know, as you do. And, like,
noise meter.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to see, you know, because you hear complaints about noise ordinance and everything else. Like, it's, you know, you can get a $20, like, noise meter off of Amazon and, like, check for yourself, which my kids loved. They thought that was, like, a hoot.
Super cool.
Yeah. But here is my impression. Compared to 15 years ago, there is so much less chaos downtown. Our nightlife is so much more well-ordered. Our police department does a great job. There are two kind of main areas where our clubs are. They cordon those areas off. They block the road so the, you know, patrons can kind of walk up and down the street and kind of be contained. But there's no traffic going up and down there. There's not none of the cruising that you used to see a lot of where people would just go up and down Jefferson Street all night. The noise ordinance has helped. I think there are a couple of maybe even three or four operations downtown that still have an issue and, like, well, occasionally maybe the DJ gets a little, like, you know, aggressive, but we have rules in place for that. It's not a thing. You know, I can remember again, 15 years ago, like, windows would shake, right? There was like now we've established that, like, you know, there's like a proper volume and we'll be monitoring that. Right. The biggest difference, just to be, like, very blunt, the biggest difference is we have a much more diverse crowd downtown, right, than we did 15, 20 years ago. We've got a lot of African-Americans that come downtown. We've got some clubs that cater to the Black community. And that's just led to, like, a lot more activity on the streets, a lot more different activity. But the real thing here, the perception versus reality, this is what's actually happening. The amount of activity that we have in bars is demonstrably going down, right? We have just fewer bars, smaller bars. That's happening. The number of complaints is going up. And that is because we have more eyes on the street now. When I was going and hanging out in downtown Lafayette in 1999, it was me and my buddies and everybody else that was there. Now we've got 29 restaurants. We've got all these retailers. We've got residents. We've got hundreds of people, thousands of people now that live in the downtown area that are there to make complaints and are there to be like, I don't like what's going on down the street. And so, you know, that's, I think, again, a reason why I'm optimistic is we're hitting that balance point where in the ecosystem, we're finally getting to the point where if we can just curb the amount of complaints that we get about our nightlife so that it's not a point of discussion and that it's no longer a thing that Jan's friends will be like, well, I would, but, you know, I can't do downtown after 10, right? I want the rest of the community to be like, I've heard they're doing great things downtown. Mm-hmm. I've heard that they've really tackled this and that they're getting on top of it.
Let's go check it out.
And I want to go check it out.
Yeah.
So I don't live downtown, obviously, but I go down there on occasion to record bands. And so I'm out after 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock with $5,000 worth of camera gear.
Yeah.
I've never felt unsafe.
No.
So I don't know if that helps change anybody's perception, but I've walked down those blocked off roads.
Yes.
I've walked through downtown. I've walked down Jefferson Street towards Pinhook. I've never felt unsafe.
I am with you. And, like, to the point where my children I live in the Oaklawn neighborhood, so not far from downtown. And all of my children, when they were teenagers, would get on their bikes and ride downtown. And we had no problems with them doing that. But the reality is that the market that we have so far for downtown, we have gotten that early adopter market, right? Yep. We aren't going to be able to hit sort of the stage that we need to hit that very healthy cities have for their downtown until we've got that next segment of the market, the people that are, like, downtown curious, right? The people that are like, I like Vestal and I like going to the ACA and I would like to downsize, but, like, do I really want to, like, pull the trigger and live downtown, right? Those are the folks that we're going for now.
Okay.
Like, me and you, like, we've been doing downtown forever, right? It's like breathing. Like, and honestly, I think that the value, we can't oversell the value of what it means to live and work and recreate in such a walkable environment.
Mm-hmm, right.
Like, when you talk about the importance of aging in place for, you know, the baby boomer generation and for poor Gen Xers like me that are eventually going to get old, that's just a better way to live, you know, not getting in your car all the time and, like, having to figure that out. Like, it's just, it really does change your mindset. And so we've got to make that type of lifestyle feel more accessible to more people.
Got you.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Final question, because this is, you know, Discover Lafayette. It's also about people. We've talked a lot about downtown. I want to talk about you guys for just a second. Mm-hmm. It's summertime. Kids are getting out of school. What are you guys doing for fun this summer?
Oh, I love that. So my kids are 10 months, 2 and 4.
Oh,
so
my gosh.
Wow. It's special in the summertime. But we love going outside as long as the heat allows.
Yep.
But my kids have been getting very into sports, especially my oldest, who thinks that she's a professional competitor at the age of 4. So just classic sports stuff. But it's been really fun to kind of see them grow up, and we'll probably be on the playground downtown a lot. Because my daughter thinks I legit built it for her. So, you know, there's that. But yeah, we love just bopping around and trying new activities and playing outside and keeping it simple.
Yeah. Excellent. Kevin, how about you?
Look, my kids are older. I've got a sophomore at Lafayette High and a freshman at LSU and a freshman at Louisiana Tech. But this summer, I think they're going to be in town more. And so I'm actually looking forward to spending more time with them.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we actually do as a family spend a lot of time downtown. You know, I'm not a particularly, I try to be a good dad. I'm not always the best. And so one of our practices growing up was, you know, when mom was gone and I didn't want to have to worry about dinner or anything else, I would just be like, look, I'm going to take you guys to La Coretta if you do your homework while we're there.
Oh, that's so
right?
delicious. Yeah.
And so we just, you know, so my kids grew up like doing their math homework at La Coretta
okay.
and like asking their waitress for like algebra tips, right? So, so yeah, I just want to spend more time with them. And I think, you know, that's kind of the fun part about this job and about what we get to do
mm-hmm.
is, you know, we do get to think about like, how do people experience this
mm-hmm.
and like, how could it be better, you know? And it makes you think about the world and everything a little bit different
yeah.
when that's what you get to think about every day.
Yep.
That's great. Well, thank you guys again for coming down here. And Jan, as always, thank you for letting me ask some questions.
Gosh, what a pleasure. Thank you, Jason. Yeah, y'all are lucky to have your children, you know, still. Mine are 25 and 32, and I see them all the time, but not like it used to be.
Mm.
Time is precious.
Time is precious. It really is. It
yeah.
really is.
Yeah.
I would not have admitted that when they were younger.
No.
When they were younger, they seemed to be much more annoying.
I'll feel that way
yes.
soon.
Yeah. 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 It gets better.
Yeah. yeah.
Right now you want sleep.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I want to thank Kevin Blanchard and Jessica, I want to say this right, Howard Boss.
That's it?
Right, of Downtown Development Authority and Downtown Lafayette Unlimited for a wonderful discussion. Thank you for sharing yourselves. I look forward to promoting this, and I really look forward to seeing so many good things unfold.
Well,
thank you for your time.
And obviously, thank you for what you do. Like, this is a great podcast. Like, this
Thanks.
Is a place where everybody kind of gets to convene as a community, and you do a great job at it. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for Jason and Chris Rader, who's made this studio possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to thank our sponsors who also make this possible. I couldn't do this without, of course, Rader, Ochsner, Lafayette General, and ViMed, as well as our loyal listeners. If you have not subscribed yet, you can subscribe to Discover Lafayette wherever you get your podcast. And also, please check out our website, discoverlafayette.net. You can find our interview today, along with about 375 other interviews. It's a treasure trove of people that really make a difference in our community. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, thank you. This is Jan Swift.